Last night, I received the latest information from Brazil, 50 slides, and I couldn't download it on my phone, so I tried here when I was here to do it. So I'm not so familiar with some of the slides that have the latest information. What I'm going to do is to try and figure out, tell you what is happening right now in Brazil, and tell you about a little bit more about the virus, their clinical presentation, and what can we do about laboratory diagnosis. So just to say that Zika belongs to the same family as West Nile and as dengue, as one of the flaviviruses. Flavi means yellow, so they're all in the same as yellow fever as well. And so where West Nile was first discovered in 1939 in Uganda, it didn't come to the attention of most of the countries until it went to New York, in New York State, and then we started to have a lot of diagnostic tests developed for West Nile. It has a relatively benign, it's a relatively benign disease. Now, Zika was first isolated in a rhesus monkey that is in the Zika forest in Uganda near Lake Victoria. I think it's a sentinel monkey because there's a number, it's number 677, that first where this virus was first isolated. And then the next year they were able to isolate in the same forest the virus from mosquitoes, and it was Aedes mosquitoes. And so over the next few years, it circulated around Africa, but in very small clusters. And so it really didn't come to any attention, except that it was studied by some of the laboratories in West Africa, mainly in with the Institut Pasteur. And these were sequenced, and then the sequences were deposited into GenBank. One of the outbreaks was in Senegal, and that's when I first was contacted by a scientist from Senegal about this, and he wanted to develop a strip for detecting this virus, but didn't manage to get any money for it, funding for it. So the latest was in Côte d'Ivoire in 1999. So you could see where it's the area where it spread. And then in Asia, the first one, Zika's viruses were found in Pakistan, Malaysia, and Indonesia. And then there was an outbreak in Yap Island in Micronesia. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then in Cambodia, the bigger outbreak that we now have a lot more information on is the most recent outbreak in French Polynesia, where there are 270,000 inhabitants spread over 5 archipelagos. So these are geographically quite distinct, and yet it spread very quickly over these islands. So this is a study that was published in PLOS NTD recently to document the spread of the disease. The first introduction in yellow from Uganda to West Africa. And then the second introduction in green, you could see that it's a lot more spread to all the different countries. Now with that, they started to trace how it went from Uganda to Asia in this article. There are just two very distinct viruses. If you look at the sequences, there's one with the Asian lineage and then the African lineage, and they are quite different. And the current one that's in Brazil is one from the Asian lineage. So now we see the Zika virus going out of Africa, okay? So this is a map of the sort of migration, they think, as far as they could trace, of how it got to South America. So you could see that from Polynesia, there was a documented outbreak on Easter Island along the way, and then Brazil at the beginning of 2015. The first case was documented in March of 2015. And by now it has spread to another 7 countries, Paraguay, Colombia, Venezuela, Suriname, etc. Okay? So the epidemic in Yap Island is a very small group of islands, population only 7,500. First outbreak of Zika lasted just a few months from April to July, extensively studied by the CDC using ELISA neutralizing antibodies with plaque reduction and then RT-PCR. They estimated the seropositivity was 78%, but we suspect a lot of that is against a background of dengue infection. So I don't think that that it was that extensive in the population. They figure the subclinical infections are 4 to 1. Now, the epidemic in French Polynesia started September 13th, 2014, September of 13 to March of 2014. As I said, the population is 270,000 spread over 5 archipelagos. They looked at the attack rate was about 10%. There's been some isolates, and therefore they were able to do some sequencing. They also described for the first time association with Guillain-Barré syndrome and other neurological symptoms in adults. But there were no reports of microcephaly in the first reports. But now that with what happened in Brazil, they've gone back now to trace some of that, and I'll show you later. So they went back and they found actually 15 cases with malformations, 12 microcephaly cases. When the mothers were pregnant during the epidemic, several had terminations. According to on the calls that I participated in every week over Christmas, what they were saying is that it was when women were exposed during the first trimester of pregnancy, it was more likely that they have a baby with sequelae. So what is the population attack rate? And so this is a very complex and table, so I'm not going to try and go through all of it, except that, you know, because Zika is so difficult to document because of all the cross-reaction if you do antibody with yellow fever, with dengue, it's really difficult to know whether these rates are real or not. And so I think everybody agreed that maybe 10% attack rate is, you know, would be a normal rate. So this is from the suspected cases in Brazil, in Salvador. And this is a dengue outbreak as well as, let me see. So this is, so this is a rash associated with Zika, chikungunya, and dengue viruses in Salvador. And so you could see that there's a lot more people suspected of having, reported having a rash. And also in the open bars is all the dengue cases. In the dark are people reporting rash. And so what they have so far is that they said that they have 58 cases of chikungunya in Salvador, and also three cases of Zika, and also two cases of dengue. That's serotype 3 and 4, and over this period. Now, this is a map showing where the dengue the dengue belt is, and the dengue belt is expanding as we speak. So in Europe, dengue has reached the tip of Italy, and so the European CDC is very concerned and has already set up a surveillance system in Europe for dengue. Now in Brazil, there's been outbreaks of dengue over from 1992 all the way to 2014. First with dengue 1, then with 3, then with 2, and again with 1, and then with 1 and 4. And so these are the number of cases, and you can see that it's been they haven't been able to really control that very well. And this column represent number of hospitalizations. So now microcephaly has now become made Zika, and the superinfection of Zika with dengue into a public health emergency for Brazil. And so between March of 2015, when they first noticed when they first isolated Zika, to the end of 2015, 3,000 cases of microcephaly was documented, which is 20 times more than the previous year. These are the babies with microcephaly, and many of them were born without any frontal cortex, and they don't survive very long. And so there's been a lot of work trying to understand the association between Zika infection and in newborns, and so the Brazilian authorities noticed that there were an increase of live newborns with microcephaly first in September, and then gradually more and more notifications. And so PAHO started a whole lot of investigations. And so by the end of the year, I think they were a lot more conscious of it, and more cases have been reported to PAHO. So the 3,000 cases was the old data that I had when I before I left Hong Kong, and last night this was gave me the latest data they have from Brazil, which is another 843. Now, I don't think within the 2 days there were so many. I think that they were able to count better since the alert went out. And so this is the latest one. And the So the distribution of it is that although it's over most of Brazil, it's concentrated in the northeast area of Brazil. So this is now included in the reports from the week one of 2016. So the criteria for notification is a head circumference of less than 33 centimeters at birth. That got changed on the 28th of November to less than 32, or two standard deviations below the mean, according to the scale that was published by WHO. But each Brazilian state is autonomous, so they may choose their own definition for reporting this criteria. So maybe, perhaps, are we over notifying? Maybe yes. I think this is the latest, is that 40% of those cases reported, I think this is the, not sure whether that's the centimeter, less than that. And so the other question that the Brazilians were trying to ask is what proportion of newborns are notified with microcephaly. Now, this state in the northeast has the most numbers, and in the higher states, about 1% of newborns were notified with microcephaly, which is really high. If you estimate for the births in the second half of the year, then about 2%. Before the epidemic, the percentage was 0.07%. So this is, I was told before I left that the distinguishing feature is that there's a lot of babies born with a lot of calcification on the brain, and that the malformation of the cortical development is seen in 68% of the people. So I'm not a clinician, so I don't know all these terms. Just showing you so that perhaps you understand. This is all provisional, so I cannot share these slides publicly. And so this is what it looks like on the scans. So what now, part of the difficulty in associating, making, establishing the association between Zika infection in pregnancy and microcephaly is that we actually don't have a very good diagnostic test to be able to definitely say that a woman has been infected with Zika virus, except if RT-PCR is done on her blood. And that's not available widely in Brazil, so wasn't able to do that. And so the current thinking is that the peak circulation of Zika is suspected to be 6 to 7 months before the first case was reported in March, and that the calcification on the brain image suggested that the damage is due to an infectious origin, and that 60% of 60 mothers, so these are the first 60 mothers that had been studied by our colleague at the school who went to Brazil to help with the investigation. She had mentioned to me that 60% of the moms actually reported a rash during pregnancy, especially during the first trimester. So far, there's been PCR results in two of the women who had the amniotic fluid with microcephaly babies identified the Zika virus in the amniotic fluid. And that they're doing PCR on autopsy of the stillbirth babies, but there's been no results here. And also, PAHO is asking French Polynesia to look back on their cases. And so this is what I showed before with the old presentation. So those, all those were new slides that were added since last night. So the clinical presentation, you know, pretty well looked the same, except that I like to say that rash seems to be the predominant presentation rather than fever. In fact, fever is reported in less than 50% of the first 24 patients that had been confirmed with Zika virus in Brazil. Some patients reported only intermittent fever. But rash, both in French Polynesia and in Brazil, a really itchy rash is actually the first reason why these women go to a doctor in the first place with this outbreak. And also, sorry, I just want to point out that there's also reports of mouth ulcers, which are not usually seen in dengue. Is that right, Jamie? And you don't see that in dengue, yeah? Okay, so this is a poster from the Brazilian government to help the doctors and public health folks with understanding the difference between dengue, chikungunya, and Zika. But unfortunately, I mean, a lot of that overlap. I guess one of the things that would make it hard to distinguish Zika from chik is also, you know, rash is very predominant when you have chikungunya. Otherwise, you know, pretty well everything is the same. Very hard to distinguish. Now, this I took from the guideline that we prepared when I was in WHO for a guideline for the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention and control of dengue when I was at WHO, and this was 2009. We never mentioned for the differential diagnosis. We included chikungunya, but there's no mention of Zika. So this year we are updating the guidelines, and I'm sure Zika would be included in the diagnosis, in the differential diagnosis. Now, for dengue, we have in the guideline that I mentioned defined what would be the kind of laboratory diagnosis that you could use to confirm a diagnosis of dengue, either by virus isolation or nucleic acid detection. As I mentioned yesterday, those give us the most confidence that, you know, this is associated with the infection. When it comes to antigen detection, if you recall yesterday, NS1 at best can detect only about 70% of the cases that have been confirmed by nucleic acid. So we still don't have the best marker using antigen detection. You will still get some false negatives. Seroconversion for with either IgM or IgG is great, but it's rare that you get two samples, two consecutive samples from patients. And so when you have one sample, then a high titer IgM is suggestive but not a confirmed diagnosis. We also define what could be used for surveillance or for measuring the impact of special interventions such as vector control interventions. IgM positivity is used because it's easy to do IgM by ELISA, so you have a high throughput assay that's fairly sensitive. The problem only with IgM is that it could last about 5 to 6 months. So you may not, for patient management, it's not that useful, but for surveillance, it's okay. If you have huge peaks of IgM positivity, you know that something is happening. There's maybe an outbreak going on. And then you could quickly go in and confirm with virus isolation or RT-PCR. And so the same for outbreak investigations. Usually the alert comes from IgM positivity, huge peak of IgM, more than normal, and then you go in and confirm with culture or with the RT-PCR, and also identify the genotype to see whether a new genotype has been introduced into the population. And so those are, you know, what we use for dengue. And whether we could then come up with the same set of laboratory diagnosis for Zika would be nice, but currently we don't. We only have the RT-PCR, and also we have neutralization, which is hard to do and expensive. I think I pointed out this yesterday, that you really need to be careful in applying these tests, because you could only find virus in the first few days in a primary infection, and in a secondary infection even shorter. So day 1 to 5, you could do PCR, you could probably do isolation, but NS1, you could see here, that after, from day six onwards, the sensitivity really drops quite a lot. And so you need to be very careful to ask about date of onset of fever before applying the test. And these are some of the reactivities that I've shown yesterday. And so when you could see that the current IgM rapid test crosswalked with all the flavi. So perhaps, you know, we could use these as an indication that somebody has been exposed to flavi viruses, but not specifically to say whether it's dengue or chikungunya or Zika. There's also a number of different other cross reactions, but they're not generally not very high level. Now, one of the things that happened in with the investigations that the Institut Pasteur made with the outbreak in New Caledonia in 2014 was that they found that when you try to detect virus in the blood and in the urine samples of six patients using RT-PCR, in fact, so these are the lines showing the, so this is on the y-axis is the cycles number, which is a measure of how much virus there is in the specimen, and these are the days after onset of fever. So you could see that with the serum, virus levels in the serum here in these patients, so each one of them, and you could see how quickly it drops by day five, the finding of virus in the serum. But in urine, which is these curves, you could actually find RNA a lot longer at a much higher level and going out to about 20 some days. So perhaps, now I would hate to think that that's shedding infectious virus because that means that it could be spread very easily. We don't know at the moment whether any of it would it be infectious, but at least you could detect RNA from Zika in these urine samples. So this is both a good news and bad news. There's also, you could also find it in saliva as well. So moving forward, we really need to have more accurate tests that we could use on a population basis to understand some of these cross reactions. And I think that the story of the association between microcephaly and Zika virus infection is still waiting for an answer, and we won't get it until we have better diagnostics. I think that if we look at saliva, these are samples that are taken as oral swabs, and you could see that, you could also isolate the RNA, Zika RNA, in 28% of blood, but 57% of the people in this study where they have both blood and saliva taken. And so so using oral swabs as an example can give you better sensitivity for detection, but it doesn't lengthen the window of detection like for urine. Yeah. So I want to call your attention to a paper that documented a returning Canadian traveler who had gone to Thailand and acquired Zika. So she left Canada and went to Bangkok, stayed there for 8 days, and then spent 5 days in Phuket, and then back to Bangkok for 3 days, and then returned to Canada via Hong Kong. Now, during the time that she was in Thailand, she didn't use any mosquito repellents or anything. She had lots of bites, especially at Phuket. And so when she returned, she had intermittent fever and chills. She had a mouth sore. She had blisters and a rash that spread to all her palms. And then she had the retroorbital headache and fever and conjunctivitis. And at day seven, she was still had these intermittent fever, but by day 16, the symptoms have resolved. And so the workup was first done in Canada. Using a dengue test because they suspected her of having picked up dengue, and her PCR was positive in the blood and the urine, and then she had also positive samples. This is for Zika. This is the dengue serology, and so the serology that was done was not very conclusive, and that's why they started doing Zika RT-PCR, and in fact confirmed that she was positive for Zika. And then they sent the results to CDC, the samples to CDC, and CDC were able to do the plaque reduction neutralization assay and confirm that in fact she had a rising titer to Zika. Okay, so for the diagnosis of Zika, for the time being, this is all we have: detection of viral RNA in blood and urine samples. These are not commercialized, so you know it's a lab assay that has to be done. If you have pair sera, then you could look at seroconversion, but otherwise, on one sample, it's very hard to know whether this it's a background of yellow fever, antibodies due to yellow fever vaccination, or dengue. But you could confirm with virus neutralization, which is very specific. But virus isolation neutralization requires doing culture and then using your sample to reduce the number of plaques. And so it's only done in a few places in the world. There are no reliable commercial kits for Zika. And so this is a summary of the possible differences that are outlined in red, of how to distinguish Zika from dengue and chikungunya. I'm not sure if it's very helpful, but there's usually no or low fever in the first few days, and then the rash is from the first day. This is based on the cases so far. And then there's conjunctivitis in 50 to 90% of cases, and itchiness is quite severe. Other than that, it's not that different from the others. And so this was just updated by the Federal University in Brazil, and he was on our weekly calls, and so we asked him to do up this table so that we could have all the information in one place. Now, in terms of the comparison of these viruses in terms of incubation period, it seems that they are not that different, 4 to 10 days for dengue, 3 to 7 days for chikungunya, and 4 days, which is 3 to 12 days for Zika. And also to note that chikungunya is alpha virus and doesn't belong to the family of favorite viruses, although the clinical presentation is quite similar. Now, in terms of specific diagnosis, there are commercial kits for chikungunya, but not a commercial RT-PCR. There are commercial kits for serology for dengue, again, not RT-PCR, although two companies are developing this test, especially on those little point-of-care machines, and so pretty soon they'll be available. Right now, for Zika, unfortunately, we don't have very much. So this is the update so far. Thank you very much.